Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mala!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's bestest, greatest, and onlyest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where each episode we take a loving look at every era, iteration, and team member of the world's favoritest, strangest superhero team, the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at @reading_hicks. Send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, like everyone else. And episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com. And presumably you found at least one episode to hear this.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter @AvantGarve. You can also find on Twitter our lovely sentient show Twitter account, Wilfred, charming chap that he is. And as always, we are brought to you proudly by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, things that caught my eye on Comicosity. There's an interview with Mark Russell and Steve Pugh, and you go, who are they and why should I care? They are the team on the Flintstones comic that's just come out. So I read that and I was kind of like, I have no interest in this comic. And then I read that interview and was like, I am slightly interested in this comic now. So I didn't realize that Mark Russell was the guy who did Prez, the recent Prez series.
Oh, okay.
And Steve Pugh, I know him from way back when Grant Morrison was doing Animal Man. So So he's a newcomer to comics, obviously. So that caught my eye. That looks like a good interview. And there's just loaded, I think recently, is an interview with Sterling Gates, who's the writer on Adventures of Supergirl, which is the digital-only series, which is also available in print.
Excellent.
So not just digital only.
Digital. Oh, DC being wacky once again.
Yeah, but I mean, I got to love Sterling Gates. He put me in a comic.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, there's an Agent Hicks in issue 2 of the Adventures of Supergirl comic.
Wow, you're famous.
Spelt the same way I spell it.
Oh, look at that. Fame forever.
Fame forever. Yeah, so shout out, Sterling. You're my man.
But other than that, being immortalized in the pages of a comic, what else has been happening in your world in terms of comics and such, Paul?
Let me just brush all these Pokemon off the desk.
Oh my god.
Get off. Come on, back on the floor. Right. Yeah, I was reading old Superman comics today. Not that old, but I was reading Crisis of the Crimson Kryptonite.
Ooh.
Which is a Superman comic in where basically Mr. Mitzelplick appears and gives Lex this piece of red kryptonite, which is magical, so it doesn't behave, you know, scientifically, basically. And it robs Superman of his powers. So does all sorts of things to get his powers back. But one of the deals, like, Mr. Mitzelplick always has a rule that you can't break. And one of the rules is Lex Luthor can't tell Superman, you know, what the deal is and that it's magical and Mr. Mitzelplick is providing it. And, of course, Superman tricks him by asking as Clark Kent. Yeah, but this was a good story because it's significant in the Superman history. So came out sort of late 80s. Basically, Lex Luthor dies at the end of the story and Superman and Lois get engaged.
Well.
And I remember at the time they got engaged because I got engaged a few months later. By the time I was married and Superman and Lois got married, it was like, I'd been married for like 5 years. So they really rushed the engagement.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
I have to say my comic reading has slacked off quite a bit. I've just been very busy with work and life in general. So I know I read comics a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't tell you what they were. But the only comic I've read recently is the one I'll be discussing on this episode. So yay me for keeping current and up to date with the world of comics. I do have about a month and a half worth of comics sitting there staring at me menacingly that I will get to at some stage. So I just need a quiet weekend or so to myself to just sit down and get caught up because there's some good stuff in there. So
you need to lose your job, mate. You need to be unemployed.
The way things are going... No, it's fine, everyone. I'm not at risk of losing my job. I could be in need of a career change, though. So
losing your patience.
Yeah, that's more like it. Yes, yes. I'm still gainfully employed. You know, still earning a paycheck. So yeah, it's all fine. It's just sometimes a change of scenery is nice.
I'll say. Ah, all right. Is it time for us to go down on Darrington Way?
Can we please?
It's been a bit quiet on the Darrington Way front. Nick Darrington has he tweeted a Tumblr picture of Casey, the, what do we say she was, a EMT, emergency response, I don't know, someone who drives an ambulance. Yeah. An AMBO who's a medical person.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we call an AMBO here in Australia.
Yep.
Yeah.
When you get into a bit of biffo and there's blood, you call the AMBO.
Yeah, and he did some pictures of Superman Red and Superman Blue, which I'd be quite thrilled if they're in the Doom Patrol comics somehow, but that'd somehow cool. I think he's just drawing stuff. And he keeps doing these photos. I mean, he is out rock-starring Jared Way, I think, with his photos. Don't you reckon?
Possibly.
Yeah. Nick Darrington, he looks so rock and roll.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think, Jared's been through his rock and roll phase.
Probably, yeah. He's leading a whole new, imprint. You know, he's got serious business to look after now. Can't be doing rock and roll forever.
He's writing and producing and stuff and, smoking a pipe and wearing slippers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what Jared's doing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Right. Anyway, God help me, is that ticking?
Oh, yes, that is ticking. And look, over there behind you, it's the Doom Clock. Okay, so looking at the Doom Clock, it's still got its fancy dual face on it now with the recent upgrades. And on the one side, we can see that the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had in our hands was issue 22 of volume 5 from the Giffen Clark run. That was cover dated July 2011, going on sale May 4th of that same year. So it has been 5 years and 10 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. But when you look at the other side of the Doom Clock, it's telling us in big flashing red letters that Volume 6 launches September 14th, and that's only 9 weeks away, Paul.
Oh. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm fanning myself too. Mercy. Yeah.
Good golly.
Good golly. So the last appearance of the team was 48 weeks ago in two different comics. We saw them in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and also in Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, cover dated September 1963 and going on sale for US 12 cents on July 18th that same year was My Greatest Adventure number 82. This story was titled Three Against the Earth and had the chief give each other patroller a false version of his origin in order to uncover a traitor in their midst.
Oh, wow.
And we actually discussed this issue way back in episode 5. So you should go and check that out for more info. But yeah, that was like their third appearance ever. Back before My Greatest Adventure actually officially became the Doom Patrol's comic. So that was a good one.
Yeah.
And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hi everybody, I'm Chad Bokelman. You may know me from the Green Lantern podcast, The Lantern Cast. You also may know me from making promises across the comics podcasting community concerning a new project I've been working on. An Action Comics Weekly podcast, to be precise. Well, it's time to deliver on that promise. The Action Comics Weekly podcast is a bi-weekly podcast featuring myself and a rotating cast of semi-regular co-hosts discussing the characters appearing in the comic series of the same name from the late 1980s. So, starting this summer, join me and Mark Marble as we discuss Green Lantern.
For all the people that want to give Hal, when he was Parallax, a lot of shit about the way he acted, Star Sapphire has nothing on Hal for being like pushed over the borderline because she's just completely friggin' nuts.
Jay Jones, as we discuss Wild Dog.
he straight up, like you said, he murders these people. And that's not my DC Comics. That's not superheroic at all. Batman wouldn't have killed anybody. But this story is it's not bad. It's not great. It's like the character himself. It's like it's just there. It just exists.
Ben Avery, as we discuss The Secret Six.
So when I read this alone, as I was reading through this issue, I'm thinking, what am I getting myself into? Because I told Chad I'd do this, but I don't know if I'm going to like this. I do end up liking Secret Six more. This is the introduction. And without this, you know, I probably wouldn't like, you know, the second chapter as much.
Doug Zavisha, as we discuss Dead Man.
Well, it's a kind of a waffly Dead Man story. It wants to be a Dead Man story. It starts to be a Dead Man story. It forgets it's a Dead Man story. And then it comes back to being one. All in the span of 8 pages.
Alan Middleton, as we discuss Blackhawk.
That there's sort of this era of Blackhawk where he was sort of dissolute and sort of couldn't get civilian life together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this story is either beginning that trend or at least tapping into that fertile story.
And Michael Bailey, as we discuss Superman.
There is really no way to tie this 2-page strip into that. So it really exists in its own world at a time where the Superman books were becoming more and more linked. So it's this oddity on a number of levels.
And many other characters featuring many more guest hosts along the way. The Action Comics Weekly Podcast, coming soon, summer 2016. Find us on Facebook for more details.
Today on the show, we're doing Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 17 and 18. And that can mean only one thing. Invasion.
Oh, no!
Yes. So this were part of the Invasion crossover, which happened in 1988, which was the big DC Universe-spanning crossover, which involved like all the titles, Superman, Batman, Flash, Manhunter. If you want to know more about the Invasion, more than we're going to say today, there is a podcast for Invasion. It's called Invasion First Strike, and it's done by Canadian people. So, you know, listen to Australians, why not listen to Canadians?
Why not?
Why not? Yes, they speak English. It's good. So I'll give just a bit of an overview of Invasion. So basically, a whole bunch of aliens who are sick of the DC Universe heroes all coming from Earth and all being so superpowered and everything, they said, let's form an alliance and go kick Earth's butt. Right. So all these alien races came together, and so they were led by a group called the Dominators, who have sort of great big heads with, they have a red spot in their forehead, and the bigger the red spot, the more in charge they are. Mm-hmm. And they have great big sharp teeth. And so they organize a whole alliance of alien races and pull together a lot of alien races that you might have seen in Legion and shows like that, so comics like that. So you've got the Kuns and the Gil Dishpan and the Scions from the Titans book, and the Daxamites, who are like people from Krypton, only not dead. Things like that. So they all formed the land. And Thanagarians, who are the Hawkmen and Hawkwomen. So,
yes.
So they all form a great big alliance, and they go to attack Earth, and they land in Australia first, which is, you know, yeah. And in the comic, it's there's an invasion of Melbourne, which is clearly drawn by someone who's never been to Melbourne. Yes, and, you know, Canberra, where I live, gets wiped out. That's where the JLI embassy is in Canberra. So, yeah. I don't live in Canberra. I used to live there. I work in Canberra. So there we go. Yeah. Enough about me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like that our nation's appearance is basically the landing point for the aliens.
And, yeah. So the first issue, all the aliens come to Earth. They start, you know, kicking butt, and they make a demand of Earth. They say, to all the people of Earth, give up your superheroes to us or we'll wipe you all out. And the first issue ends with the Daily Planet publishing the Earth reply, which is, Earth to invaders, drop dead.
Whoa, harsh language.
Yeah, and there's a subtle message in there for the aliens.
Yeah.
So, Mike, do you want to take us through the first of these two issues?
So, yes, Doom Patrol number 17, which went on sale October 25 of 1988 for a whole dollar, $1 US. Edited by Robert Greenberger, written by Paul Kupperberg. The penciler was Graham Nolan. Timothy Dazon on the inks. Apologies if I've mispronounced that, Timothy. Robert M. Pinaha did the letters, and the colorist was Michelle Wolfman. And can I just say, I love the cover of this issue. It's so cool.
It's really different.
Yeah. It's got the patrol at the front there, and you've got Aquaman and all the Atlantean warriors and the sea devils off the... Oh, it's so action-packed. I love it.
Aquaman on a giant seahorse.
Yeah, as he should be.
Like, if I was in charge of the DC Universe, Aquaman would never be seen without being on a giant seahorse, no matter what comic or situation.
Yep. Why aren't you writing for Rebirth, Paul?
Honestly. In bed with Mera on a seahorse. That's what I want to see.
That is a horrid mental image, and thank you very much. So this issue, the title of it is From Gildishpan with Doom. And can I just say, I'm not a fan of the alien race titled Gildishpan. It's like, okay, they're an aquatic race. So it's like, they're going to have Gil, so we'll put Gil in the name. And what's something else that sounds funny? Dishpan. Really? Yeah. And they're not the most scary looking aliens in the Alliance, I have to say.
No, they look sort of like squishy slugs that make C shapes.
Yeah, I was thinking like organic U-bends. But in floating capsules to protect themselves. So
they look more like pasta than aliens.
Yeah, pasta. Anyway, as we open the issue, we start beneath the Arctic ice cap, where we meet the underwater adventurers, the Sea Devils. And they're cruising around in their submarine, Devil One, when they detect a massive individual object heading towards them at a fast clip. And they discover it's actually Aquaman, and he's leading the Atlantean army off to somewhere. And we
on a seahorse.
Aquaman on his seahorse leading the Atlantean army towards them. And we quickly cut away to the Doom Patrol headquarters in Kansas. And we see Niles, the chief. He's looking over a wall of regular size monitors, I have to point out. Doesn't have the giant ones anymore. Yeah. And Robot Man comes in to check on him. And apparently Earth isn't doing too well against the alien invaders. And they discuss the fact that Australia has been taken over, as shown in the first issue of the Invasion crossover.
Bugger.
Crikey.
Bugger. Yeah.
Stone the Crows. Bloody Struth. Aliens. Struth.
Bloody mongrels.
So, of course, Cliff being Cliff, he asks Chief, when will the patrol get a crack at these damned aliens? And Chief replies with, well, I'm holding you in reserve until I've ascertained when you'll be most effective. And the conversation turns to what they're going to do about Arani and her slightly awkward story. And young Scott bursts into the room and he's saying, you've got to come see. And they've got to go and see whatever it is because Gargoax has arrived. He's landed in the patrol's hangar. And he says to the patrol, I've got an offer for you. And Josh pipes up with, don't you forget you just tried to kill us all recently, just a few weeks ago? And Josh is referring to the events of issue number 12, which we covered back in episode 47. But Gargoax continues on monologuing and he says he's quite genuine and he says he's offering to form an alliance with them against the rest of the invading forces.
Because they bloody snubbed him, didn't they?
Pretty much. We return to the Arctic and Aquaman and Aqualad enter Devil One and they meet the Sea Devils and bring them up to speed on the war with the aliens. Because apparently the Sea Devils have been out of touch with the surface for 2 weeks and know nothing about what's been happening.
Yeah. Can I just say I love the Sea Devils. They're like a bunch of – they're four people hang together. They all wear their swimmers inside their sub.
Mm-hmm.
They've all got a big sexy SD on the front of their outfits. You know, they're very big on the Thigh Masters looking at them.
Yeah. Yes.
But they come from a simpler time in the DC Universe where if you could have a thing and your thing was we're underwater and we have adventures, you know. It's like the challenges of the unknown. They're mostly we go underground and we have adventures, or cave casts and we go into caves and have adventures. You know, it's simpler time. There needs to be more of that.
Oh, look, we'll wait and see what Rebirth brings later on down the track. But yeah, you're right. It was a simpler time And it was just gangs of heroes hanging out having adventures. Great stuff.
Kevin Smith did a movie about people go to malls and have adventures, so I guess there's, you know, it's still going on a bit.
Sure. But in any case, the Sea Devils, they agree to help Aquaman out with his plan because he's discovered an alien base nearby in the Arctic and he's going to go do something about it. Now, as we go on, it's weird how the base suddenly becomes an alien ship as well. So it's, you know, obviously the intel isn't quite as good as...
It's a ship base.
Ship base, yeah. A vessel, an alien vessel of some sort. So we then cut away to Earth's orbit, where the Patrol have joined Gargarax in his spaceship. And he admits to them that, yes, he's joined forces with them in order to stop the Alien Alliance. Yes, after they rejected Gargarax. Imagine that. Gargarax not getting along with other aliens. Well, I never.
They contacted him and said, you're on the dark side of the moon with a really good prime position. Bugger off. We want it. He thought they would, you know, team up with him, but they were like, get out.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So yes, Gargarax's sole motivation for stopping the Alien Alliance is so that he can end up saving the Earth for himself later on, of course. And the team is sort of preparing themselves for the mission, and Scott confides in Josh that he's worried about going into battle with his powers acting up, as they have done recently. And Josh, you know, does his best to console him, despite the fact that he's also unsure as to what's happening with Scott and his powers. And in the background, we can see Irani lurking around, and she realizes that the team are acting like she's no longer there. And while she wishes she could say something to them, she's reluctant to tell them the truth.
Yes. What is the truth?
So Gargarax's ship begins its descent towards the Arctic, and we can see that the water-dwelling aliens, the Gildishpan, are aware of their approach, and they begin to prepare their defenses. But just as they do, it's at that very moment that the Atlantean army also strikes the alien base. Yes, Aquaman's there on his seahorse. The patrol are joined by Gargarax's warrior women, the Sirens, as they start to deploy from the ship. And they join the Atlanteans in the fight, so the biff's on already. But in the middle of it, Rhea starts flirting with Aqualad, as you do in the middle of a giant, you know, fight against aliens. And she asks Aqualad for his number after they get through all this fighting.
Hello there.
Yes. Aquaman, being the sensible hero that he is, he chastises them both and says, get back to punching aliens. And we then cut away to see the Sea Devils disembarking from Devil One, and they launch their attack on the aft of the alien ship, or base, sorry. So the aliens are caught in a classic pincer move.
Yeah, it's technically called the butt of the ship, Mike.
Right, the butt, sorry.
The butt of the ship, yeah.
It's been a while since I've been sailing, so I forgot. It's the butt. And what's the front of it called, Paul?
The front.
So the front of the ship and the butt of the ship, right.
Yeah, not the front butt, the back butt.
Right. Oh, dear. So the fight continues, and Irani is refusing any assistance from Robot Man, even though she just about got walloped by a couple of aliens. She's yelling, I don't need anyone. And Cliff sort of watches her for a second and thinks that she has been acting weird since the Chief returned, and it looks like she's enjoying killing aliens far too much.
I thought she was singing Run to Paradise, actually.
Don't need
anyone.
Oh, God, am I? I don't think she was. Was that song even out at this time?
Yeah, probably.
Probably would have been, yeah. Great. I know what the musical outro is going to be this week. And inside the alien vessel, the Gildishpan begin to panic at their unexpected losses, and they start discussing a way to crush all their attackers at once. Uh-oh. So the fight continues with our heroes clearly gaining the upper hand, and the Sea Devils, who are still undiscovered by the aliens, whilst they're at the butt of the ship, they begin planting magnetic mines on the vessel before they realise that the engines are being started up. Uh-oh. And they quickly head back to the front of the ship to warn Aquaman and the others, and Aquaman uses his telepathic powers to tell his soldiers to retreat, while Aqualad warns a patrol. They all start to make their escape until they realize that Irani isn't with them. That's because she's still fighting aliens, being stubborn, telling everyone she doesn't need anyone else. And Cliff radios her, telling her to get away, but she's convinced herself that she can freeze the engines to shut them down, even though they're still starting up. And as the Sea Devils make their escape, they're saying that they'll use the detonator for the mines as soon as they're clear of the ship. But Irani's still there. She keeps trying to freeze the ship. She's making a giant ice field, pouring more and more power into it. She's saying she can't turn away from this task after failing everything else. She's got a bit of a chip on her shoulder, Alderaan. So Cliff, Josh, and Scott, they're all pleading for her to get away from there, saying, you know, there's no time, she's in great danger. But she continues to unleash her ice powers, telling them, shut up, nothing else matters. I told you we'd find Niles, but it didn't go according to my plan. He knows the truth, you'll never believe me, it's all over. And at that point, the engines ignite and Arani is blasted.
Boom!
Boom indeed.
Oh. Actually, it's silent because they're out, they're underwater and there's no sound underwater.
Okay, sure. And just after the engines start up, the Sea Devils set off the mines. And so there's even more explosions at the butt of the ship. And as that happens, Cliff and the patrol, they recover Arani's body and they realize, yep, she's dead, and they're all in shock. So they can't believe that they've lost her, and they can't believe she sacrificed herself like that. And later on, at the Arctic, with the patrol reunited with Niles, he says he regrets bringing Arani on this mission. He says to them he failed to recognize how troubled and unnerved she was at the revelation that he was still alive. So, you know, they're grieving there momentarily, but their grief is cut short with the revelation that the Gildishman ship is disabled, but both their forces and the Earth forces in the Arctic are now at a standoff. And who knows what will happen next? So, Paul, what do you think of that issue?
We do. We read it.
True.
It's a great issue. I actually really like the pencils of Graham Nolan. He brings a different energy to the book,
yes.
Less cartoony than Eric Larson, and probably more fluid than we've seen for quite some time. Like, you know, everything looks really good. There's a lot of tech in this that looks pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah, but as a story, I mean, this is the end of Arani, and, you know, talk about never getting any closure on this.
You know, exactly.
We've had, you know, since 1977, I think, Arani has been saying, Niles is alive, I'm his wife. And, you know, 2 issues ago we discovered Niles is alive, and he says, no, she's not my wife. And, you know, she sort of is shunned by the team and, you know, she commits suicide, basically.
Yeah.
You know, there's... It's not a, you know, she wasn't trying to win. She was just refusing to leave no matter what. So that was really, it's really interesting. I would love to know what the real story was meant to be for Arani, you know, where this was meant to go. Because, you know, it's not a secret that Grant Morrison was coming 2 issues after this one. And the rumor has it was that Paul Kupperberg and Robert Greenberger agreed to do some clearing the decks for Grant.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe this is part of it, but, you know, her saying that, you know, she can never tell them the truth and then she's gone and we don't know the truth.
Exactly. That's what's bugging me. It's like, God, what was the truth? Because she's basically never mentioned again, really.
Yeah. And she was a really harsh woman, not very warm, you know, but she pulled the team together and, you know, funded them and, you know, her whole mission for the team was to, you know, let's find Niles. And having found him, it's the worst thing that ever happened to her. And I don't really, I don't understand why. I don't know what the deal was.
That's what's killing me. The fact that there's some other secret, some other plot thread there that we'll never get. The as you said, we'll never get any closure on it. So because once Niles comes more into the forefront, you know, once Morrison takes over, you know, he's well and truly moved on. You know, he never mentions her again. It's never brought up. So it's like, what the hell? What was it? What was the truth?
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, it's a great issue. The pencils are great. The story, there's not a part of Invasion the entire story. Well, this is pretty much the only tie-ins I've read of it, along with the main mini series. But what I've read of it, there's nothing I dislike. It's such a fun adventure, you know, and a great big battle against these horrible aliens. So yeah, it's a great issue.
Yeah. So then I guess we have to go into Invasion number 2. It's Invasion was 3 parts and each part was like 80 pages. So they're great big fat comics. But in this one, we see that, you know, lots of titles, they've had lots of skirmishes with the aliens, and they've had some wins and some losses, etc. And we see that Arani is the first fatality of the whole invasion crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly significant. But there's a great big gathering of the heroes, and they all get briefed, and they go off on various missions, and, you know, they've decided they can kick the aliens' butts by being coordinated. So there's a retaliation in Melbourne and Australia. Yeah, we see the Doom Patrol involved in a few in more missions in the Arctic with Aquaman. And they're really turning the tide on the invaders, so things are going well. But and then we see that there is one alien who's been doing research into people on Earth with superhuman powers and has identified something called the metagene.
Uh-oh.
Which is something that gives people superpowers. It's like if you were in Marvel, you'd call it mutant powers, unless you're modern day, which you have to call it inhuman powers because of
yes.
What's happening at Marvel for some reason.
Oh, Marvel.
Yeah. So, this guy has identified the metagene, and, you know, we see the aliens have this base called the Starlag, which they is a prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing lots of experiments there, and he's worked out a way to neutralize the metagene, and he creates the Metabomb.
Oh.
Yes. The comic ends with him preparing to detonate the Metabomb after the war is over. So, yes, issue 18 sort of runs parallel to that. So issue 18 came out in January 1989, according to the cover, but in real life, according to reality, it came out November 29th, 1988. Dollar comic, edited by Robert Greenberger again, and it's called Endings... Beginnings. Confusing. Make up your mind. Yes, written by Paul Kupperberg, penciled by Graham Nolan, inked by Timothy Dazon again, lettered by Johnny Workman, who's still around lettering comics to this day. Did you know that?
Bless him.
Yeah. Coloured by Michelle Wolfman, no relation to the mummy. can I use that joke? Yeah. Anyway, so we see that the alien race has been defeated. The Doom Patrol are travelling back to Kansas. They arrive. People are cheering them in the street. Can you believe that?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But Gargiulak says, hey, Alliance is over now, guys. We've beaten the aliens. It's on like Donkey Kong. So, Scott's very pleased to see everyone cheering them. Everyone's sort of sad that Arani is dead. Sort of.
Mm.
Yeah. So Gargiulak leaves after threatening them. See Rhea looking out, and, you know, the people are celebrating in the street that the invasion's over, but she's really sad. Scott comes to talk to her, and Rhea's, you know, very reflective that Arani lost her life, and Scott's sitting there looking on the couch, and then he starts to cry, and he says, and then while she's not really listening, he said, "Rhea, I'm dying, Rhea," because he's been battling leukemia and had his powers mucking up. But she hears him, and she comes over to comfort him and explains, and, you know, she ends up giving him a hug and says, you know, "We need to treat you," and everything. He said, "No, I'm staying with the Doom Patrol. You know, this is where it's going to end for me." And she said, she calls him, "You're the bravest man I ever met." And he looks really, you know, stunned that she's calling him a man. And, you know, it's kind of touching.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, because these guys, you know, joined the team at the same time, and they're both young, and they've hung out outside the team as well. So, yeah, there's a bit of a relationship there. Yeah.
Yeah, and unlike some people on the team, these guys are genuine friends.
So, yes.
Yeah. We see that Gargiulak is now above Earth and is positioning himself, and he's talking about the first thing we're going to do is wipe out the Doom Patrol. And he has a big chuckle with his female Furies all gathered around him. Are they called Furies?
I thought they were the Sirens.
The Sirens.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, Sirens sound different. Yes, then we see that Niles is expecting the attack soon, but the Doom Patrol is basically standing around. But Josh has gone to arrange funeral matters for Arani, and there's one guy who sort of wants to, from the funeral agency, funeral parlor. Well, anyway, he wants to make it a circus, basically, and have parades and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, Josh is pretty angry about that and overheats his coffee cup, which explodes, and threatens him with, when then suddenly there's an explosion and they rush outside and Gargiulak is attacking. So, you know, his ship is there and his sirens are there doing strafing runs on the Doom Patrol headquarters. And they all come out and it's fighting in the sky. So Negative Woman is zooming around. Josh Clay is zooming around using his force powers. Lodestone goes up rear. So it's all fighting in the sky, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And Niles is watching this and he thinks, you know, oh, we're losing. I need to call the president and discuss something. We see Larry, who no longer has any negative energy. He hasn't for, you know, just about all this series.
Mm.
He's jumped in a helicopter and is getting ready to take off when suddenly Gargoyx's ship zooms down and attacks the hangar where the helicopter is. And it sort of, his helicopter gets splattered by rubble. And we see him lying in the rubble, pretty badly beaten. Cliff is fighting. Hot Hands is fighting. Scott's out there.
Go, Hot Hands.
Heating up a siren's face. And then and the other one comes at him and then he does, I've got nothing else to do but pick two, Porcupine. He does, pokes a siren in the eyes with his hot hands and says, nyuk, nyuk, nyuk. And so does a bit of Three Stooges stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Negative Woman, her energy is in the sky. When she gets hit with this beam which disrupts the energy and it's more painful than she's felt and she goes back to her body. And she's conscious in the body, but she realizes the negative energy has gone.
Ooh.
Where's it gone?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not gone to Larry.
No.
So they, Cliff is now fighting. So he's getting melted with acid. So he takes down one of the sirens by bashing the ground and making a fall upward in the air. Fly upward, technically better. Yes.
She's in a very awkward position when she falls or flies, whatever it is.
Yeah. Mm. And we see a military base in the midst of this where they're getting a request from the president and they're coordinating that with Niles and Niles is on the blower to them. And we see there's a satellite in space and it's part of the Strategic Defense Initiative or the Star Wars Initiative, as it used to be known.
Mm.
Mm. And we see the Doom Patrol are basically on the ropes. Yeah, so Lodestone's crawling on the ground as the satellite starts to fire up something, and then we see Scott is getting throttled by a siren. Cliff's melting. You know, half the team are on the ground. It's looking really bad. Mm. Gargoyx is in his spaceship coordinating this from above the Earth when he hears an alarm, and his spaceship gets destroyed by the SDI satellite.
Blam.
Yeah, in a full page spaceship explosion. So Gargoyx is dead at this point. And I'm pretty sure that's the last time we ever saw Gargoyx in the comics.
Hmm.
Unless it's in flashback. Yeah, and the sirens are suddenly aware that their master has been destroyed and so there's nothing for them to do here now. So they all fly off. And, yeah, the Doom Patrol headquarters is ruined. Very few of the Doom Patrol are feeling okay. We see a few days later they gather and it's for the funeral of Irani and they've got a grave marker for her. Oh, Niles is saying it was all very sad. She was a poor, deluded woman and all we can do is mourn her. What a bastard.
Now, in our previous episode where we did the Doom Patrol basics and I'm sorry to whichever listener it was, but someone asked us if the patrol ever mourned the loss of a team member in a proper manner, when I think this is one of the few, if not the only time I can recall them actually doing such a thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
But it's tinged with like weirdness because they're basically saying, well, Irani was a nutcase, so, you know.
So she fits right in and, yeah, we're going to miss her. But, yeah, she was a nutcase. You know?
Yeah. And as they're leaving the grave, there's a great big sort of negative flash in the sky and Josh, I think, who says it, Josh? Everyone's negative, so it's hard to tell. I think it's Josh says, my God, what the hell's that? To be continued, Invasion number 3. And this is the end of Paul Kupperberg riding the Doom Patrol.
Mm. Yes. What a way to go out.
Mike, thoughts on this one?
I thought it was okay. I think I preferred the previous issue a bit more. A lot of this was basically just, yeah, Gargoyx being Gargoyx and saying, I'm going to wipe out the Doom Patrol again and fight, fight, fight. And that was pretty much, I mean, yes, there's a, you know, the scene with Rhea and Scott is touching and, you know, he's fully acknowledging that he doesn't have much longer on this earth. So that was a bit sad. But yeah, it was, I think it was still a good issue. I think I preferred the previous one a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's interesting, though. I mean, reading this, knowing it's the last time you'll see many of these characters in this comic, it's, you know, I find probably the first time I read this, it didn't touch me this way, but I think doing this show has given me a much more of a better appreciation for some of the other characters who come and go, particularly Scott. So I actually found this quite sad, you know, thinking that Scott's, you know, time is almost done with the Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Because it's in Invasion number 3. Do we actually see his passing, or is it just mentioned?
Let me cover that for you.
Okay.
So, Invasion number 3, we see that the flash in the sky was the gene bomb going off, so that the alien unleashed. The alien is basically thrown in prison for doing that by the Dominion, because they, you know, they like to win wars by fighting them, not by, you know, dropping bombs that, you know, render the gene gone. And everyone, basically everyone who has superpowers loses control of their powers. So at the funeral, she's dead. She doesn't do anything. Scott basically starts heating up too much. Lodestone can't control her gravity powers and starts, you know, magically, you know, throwing rocks around. Yeah, so it's all hell is breaking loose here. Basically, there's a few heroes in the DC Universe who aren't affected. People like the Martian Manhunter, who's an alien. He doesn't have, you know, the metagene, Superman. So they're basically running around trying to solve all this.
Right.
Robot Man is not affected. He does not have the metagene. He's just a man with a robot body and a brain. So basically, he gets recruited by the heroes, and they go off to the Dominion homeworld. And all the heroes who are, you know, going nuts basically collapse, and they all end up in a great big sort of aircraft hangar in stretchers. So they create like a superhero hospital. And they're, you know, they're all dying and no one knows what to do about it. So they decide the only way is to go into space and find the answer. So they go to the Dominion homeworld and they find Martian Manhunter does some shape-shifting and disguises himself as a Dominion alien. And Robot Man comes along as his sort of robot companion. Not like that, but you know, like that.
Yeah, I'll keep it clean.
Yeah. So they, and this guy confesses that he created this, and they go, okay, where did you do that? And he said, I did it on the alien prison where all the people were being held. So then they have to go to the alien prison, and while they're there, they get discovered, and I think Martian Manhunter gets the cure, and there's a great big space battle, etc. And Doom Patrol, you know, Cliff is involved front and center in this comic. It's really cool. And they get back to Earth, and all the heroes are starting to really go downhill. And the first hero to die in the DC Universe from the metagene being infected is Scott Fisher. So, Hot Hands, he passes away. We see him lying there. We get told that Scott Fisher is dead. And then it's like the first of many. But basically, the heroes, they return, they detonate something in the upper atmosphere, which cures them all. Yay!
Hooray!
Hooray! Right.
Comic book science.
Yeah, and the invasion's over. All the heroes are back to normal. There's a few little setups for new series, etc. But basically, the upshot of this is for the Doom Patrol were pretty much decimated. So Lodestone, she was in the coma from the gene bomb. She doesn't recover from the coma, so she goes into the next issue of the Doom Patrol still in the coma. Scott is dead. Negative Woman has lost any connection to negative energy, so she is just Val Vostok now and becomes sort of a spy lady in the DC Universe, but not in the Doom Patrol comic. Josh basically is sick of death, and he renounces his powers and just wants to be a doctor from now on.
Yep.
And loses like 20% of his body mass.
But he increases in his number of sweaters.
Yeah, he wears more sweaters and becomes far less muscly. Cliff is still there. He's still Robot Man, but he goes to a sanitarium because he can't cope with all the death. Destruction. Chief is still Chief.
Well, I think I think Chief is changed somewhat after the events of this, and well, obviously because it's a different writer coming along as well. But yeah, this is when Chief starts to get really weird and creepy. I think
he becomes very harsh.
Yes, yes.
So a lot less paternal to the team and more creepy uncle to the team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. So yeah, end of an era there.
End of an era. Yeah. But the cover of the last issue it basically reflects the contents because it has the sirens, you know, who are very tall, muscular, bondage-dressed women, basically dominating over the Doom Patrol. So it was the, you know, Cliff lying on the ground. One of them is holding Scott up and just dangling him by his collar.
Mm.
Rhea's sort of been dragged by her hair in the background.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it looks bad for the Doom Patrol and everything's on fire.
Yeah.
So you had the previous issue with everything underwater and then everything's on fire here. Fire and water.
Ah.
Ah, they go together. Good. Anyway. But I got to say, I love the Invasion crossover. I think it is one of the best DC Universe events.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah. It had really good stakes and it involved all the books in a really logical way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some crossover tie-ins are just, you know, dumb and they've got no reason to be. But, yeah. You know, aliens were everywhere and attacking everyone. And, you know, there were Durlans shape-shifting and disguising themselves as people. And, you know, it was all really cool.
Yeah, that was a great... It was a proper united crossover in that, yeah, the aliens were attacking everywhere on Earth. So all the heroes on Earth were getting together and fighting back. And it was really cool. Yeah.
And using it to bring back, like, the Sea Devils, who are pretty obscure and, you know, there's not a lot of 80s comics featuring the Sea Devils. So it's great to see them, you know. And Aquaman's on a giant seahorse, which, you know, is always a winner in my book.
Clearly. I didn't know you were such a fan.
I want to see that in the Justice League movie.
Right. Okay. I can't quite picture I can picture Jason Momoa on a giant seahorse, but it'd be like a real grim, dark, angry-looking seahorse.
It'd be a seahorse with tats and piercings and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And a really evil glint in its eye, yeah.
Yeah, badass black seahorse.
Oh, dearie me. I think we've doomsplained that pretty well, Paul.
We've doomsplained a lot of that.
We have.
Morning Fever, the new show from the Fire and Water Podcast Network celebrating the classic Saturday morning cartoons. Available on fireandwaterpodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. Saturday Morning
Fever. Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last time on the show, we asked people what's their favorite spin-off, and this could be from anything. Like, it could be a spin-off of, you know, TV, comics, movies, whatever. So we heard from Craig 101, who's Craig R. McD on the Twitter, and he said TV, Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, and Stargate Atlantis. They're his favorite spin-offs. And in comics, Superboy, the Carl Kessel run. Did you make the Kessel run in less than 5 parsecs? And Impulse, which is a spin-off from The Flash, the Mark Waid issues. And, yeah, they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
I read it. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, my favorite Star Trek.
Yep. Good stuff. We heard from at Carthy Cacarella, who is Hero Word Elder on the Twitters, and he said, Gone to Texas is my favorite spin-off of you.
What's Gone to Texas, Mike?
Gone to Texas is a podcast about the Preacher comic book from Vertigo and the Preacher TV show from AMC, which I am involved with.
Oh, so it's a spin-off of this, sort of.
I guess so, yes, yes. Well played, Karthik, well played.
Good. We heard from Richie O'Hara Beamond and at Rickety OB, and he said, I can only think of TV spin-offs at the moment, so I'll go with Deep Space Nine, Daria, and Count Duckula.
Which, and apparently I learned that Count Duckula spun off from Danger Mouse.
Did it?
Well, that was what he and several other people were telling me online, and I was like, oh, okay, you're clearly better experts at that than I am, because I didn't remember it at all, and I was a big Danger Mouse fan back in the day.
Really?
Yeah. So there you go.
You got a Danger Mouse tat?
No.
Getting one?
It's not on the list. I have a couple of others on a list, okay. But that's not one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know if I'll share the list yet, but we'll get there one day. Look, we heard from Fractures at Fractures on the Twitter, who this week is called Ferocious Fractures, and it's really nice to hear from Frack once again. It's been too long, Frack. Swear to God. He said Gotham Central, one of the best bat-related series ever.
I would say that.
Yeah, I've only read the first trade of that so far, but yeah, very good stuff. Frack also said, and Suicide Squad, if you count it as a spin-off from Legends. Anytime I can mention Ostrander's Suicide Squad is a bonus for me.
I bloody love Suicide Squad.
Oh, I know you do, mate. Yeah. I know.
I've never mentioned that before.
No.
We heard from Alan Middleton, who's at Professor Alan. He does some podcasts that we like. He said, I play the Spider-Man Unlimited iOS game every day.
Yeah, that's a good game. And yes, that's technically a spin-off. Yeah,
I guess it is, yes.
Yeah. We heard from Bud A, who is at rbudf09 on the Twitters. And he said, Pink Panther cartoons after the movie intro. And first few years are surreal enough to fit in Doom Patrol Morrison's run. So,
right.
Yeah, I think the old Pink Panther cartoons from like the 60s and 70s, I think there was like a real-life Pink Panther car used in the intro with a kid driving it around. It was very odd, if that's the one that Arbud means, yeah.
Oh, okay. Richie O'Hara Beeman came back with another response, and he said, holy smokes, does Rosencrantz and Guildenstern a dead count? So that spins off Shakespeare.
Mm. Yes.
So if so, that, yeah.
Yes, and Karthik replied with, it should, and I agree. Can't argue with that.
Yes, and then we heard from Aaron Long at Juice005, and he said, on Friday, my supper spun off into a delightful dessert. It was red and white strawberry shortcake for Canada Day. Thanks for asking.
Right. It's, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Juice. Thanks. And happy Canada Day to you, too.
We need to vet these better, don't we?
Yeah, we do. We do. Oh, look, we also heard from a friend of the show, Kevin, at Ostrakus One, who this week is called Evince Them Wilt Rake. And his answer was Nightwing and Birds of Prey spinning out of Batman in the pre-New 52 universe. Yeah. Some good stuff there. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Over on the Facebook, we heard from Jared Driscoll. We had a new listener?
I think so. Let's say yes.
Yeah. Okay. He said, my favorite spin-off has to be Deathstroke the Terminator series from the late 80s, early 90s from the New Teen Titans. This was before when the character became overused. That is pretty cool. I had letters in that series.
Oh, did you?
No, for real this time.
Right. Okay. And still on the Facebook page, we also heard from Ruth Sutherland, and her answer was Xena, Warrior Princess, which would have spun out of Hercules' Legendary Journeys, I think it was called.
Good.
Yeah. So what about you, Paul? What's your favorite spin-off thing?
This is so bloody hard, this question.
It is. Thanks.
Yeah. What moron put this on the list? I think I would have to say that Hitman. Hitman is my favorite spin-off. It's nice. spun out of The Demon, technically. So Garth Ennis and... with John McRae, they did the Demon series, and they created the Hitman as part of the Bloodlines initiative, which is DC Annuals, where everyone was told to create a crap character, and they created a good one by mistake. Frank is doing a Bloodlines podcast as we speak. Right. Or maybe not. He's probably asleep right now. I don't know. Anyway, but there is a Bloodlines podcast, so that will cover Hitman soon. But the Hitman series was... better than the Demon series that it spun out of, and one of my favourite comics with an ending. You know, this, you know, people write comics and they never bloody end.
Yep.
This one has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And
it doesn't, you know, just
ends with a great big exclamation point.
Yes.
God, yeah, so that's my my answer.
Excellent. Mine, again, so many choices I could have gone with for this one. But I'm going to go with one that a few other listeners have mentioned, and that's Deep Space Nine. I'm a huge fan of Star Trek, and when that started up, it was just, it took what had come from The Next Generation and just made it even better. And
I love Star Trek. The Rebels, Darth Vader, all that's fantastic.
Paul, don't make me come down there. But Deep Space Nine took what had come before, expanded upon it, and yet stood on its own two feet with its own setting and its own stories. And it was just, it is my favorite Star Trek series out of all of them. It's just such great stuff. So that would be, have to be my favorite spinoff from the very many that were running around in my brain earlier today. And I couldn't, you know, what a question, honestly. God. Yes, well, there we go.
Hmm. The other thing that's new is we got some new iTunes reviews. So, if you put up an iTunes review and you're not an Aussie, you have to tell us, because we can't see foreign iTunes without going out of our way to do so. So is that correct way to describe it?
That'll do.
Anyway, so we got a 5-star review from DS and RS, who I suspect are Darren and Ruth Sutherland, who do the Xenozoic Xenophiles podcast, Trekker Talk, and Warlord Worlds, all of which I recommend highly. If you they have a really great way of taking you through a comic. We have a really bad way of taking people through a comic, but they are very
thanks.
Good at it.
Jesus.
Well, we're not really, like, we're very inaccurate, I would say. Not very precise. I'm very inaccurate, not very precise. Whereas they make you feel like you're reading it with them. It's really something they do. Anyway, okay. I'm getting off the point. Anyway, this is a review they left in May, which made us sound like real dickheads for a few months. So they said, waiting for Doom, you say? The good-natured fun of this podcast, we have you waiting for the next episode. So, well, thank you for that review.
Thanks, guys.
We got another review from Namtab29. I've got no idea who Namtab29 is.
It's Norway.
Yeah, and he said, fun show about underrated characters, 5 stars. Doom Patrol have never been big comic book stars, but they have a rich history and a lot of good comics in their past. This show examines the Doom Patrol a bit at a time. The perfect podcast for anyone who has ever enjoyed their adventures. Plus accents. Recommended.
That's such a big selling point for us, isn't it? The accents.
What accents?
Crikey.
I got no bloody accent. That's the thing about us Aussies. We don't have accents. It's the rest of the world that has accents. True. This is what the absence of an accent sounds like.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. That's the truth. And the final new review came from Count Druncula, who, that's Brian Daly, who does all those podcasts. Secret Origins. Give me those Star Wars.
Power
of Fishnets. Yes, that's the other one.
Trust me to focus on that one. Yes, what did Ryan say?
He said, don't wait to subscribe to this podcast. 5 stars. Waiting for Doom is one of the most thoroughly entertaining and consistently funny comic book podcasts I've heard. Yeah, good. And I listen to a lot of podcasts. Hosts Mike and Paul, why are you first, bring their ill-conceived love for the ill-fated Doom Patrol to glorious life on this show, where every episode drips with humor, longing, and references to a superhero who may or may not be a literal street.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and Paul, wait for Doom. That is the new Doom Patrol podcast, but there's no reason you should wait to subscribe to this terrific show.
Thanks, Ryan. Also, I think I'm first because it's alphabetical.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm older.
Let's stick with alphabetical.
Why is it ill-conceived love?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. What's he saying about the show?
I don't know.
It's like a back. Is that like a neg? Did we just get negged?
I don't know. And because I do things in different orders, we've got an email from Dr. Ange, which answers the question of favourite spin-off.
Huh.
Yeah, so we'll slot this in now so no one will notice that we missed it earlier.
Seamless.
He said a fair bit about what makes a spin-off. But anyway, the point of, he said, I think my favorite spin-off is John Constantine, Hellblazer. He spun out of Swamp Thing. Mm. He had a big story in Swamp Thing 50 where Mento gets his brain fried. Anyway, so then he got his own comic, and he basically learned a lot more about him and all the troubles in his life. And he said, and Hellblazer ran for an unprecedented 25 years in the current market. That sounds insane.
It does.
Some might even say that John has lapped Swamp Thing. I collected the first 12 years of the book. I've got a bit of Hellblazer. I sort of dip in and out of Hellblazer, so I've never, from
I was the same. Swain.
Yeah, but yeah. There's some good stuff. But he said he didn't like the Garth Ennis stuff the best, which is, fair call. There's some good stuff there.
Each to their own, yeah.
I won't argue with that.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
All righty. I think that's a mailbag done.
That is done.
It's a big mailbag this week.
It was a big fat mailbag. Sorry, it was a generous mailbag.
Politically. Oh, God.
Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, now we are doing something new. There's a good friend of the show, Doug Zavisha, who does a Doom Patrol blog. And basically, from now on, if you want to do sort of message board responses to our episodes, he will have the spot for that. So he's going to post a link to the episode, and below that, and we might put in some visual aids for the episode, so you can see covers and funny things that we made fun of inside the book. But yeah, you can respond on his message board. So, and you can do question of the week there. But we're not doing question of the week for next step because we've got something special planned for next step.
Very special.
Yeah, we're doing it in mime.
No. I'm really excited. I've been practicing all week, Paul. You'd be really proud of me.
Show me.
Hang on. Let me start that again. You like that?
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I hope you've been practicing too.
Yeah, look at this.
Hang on. Whoa. Oh, wow. Oh, dude, that's so good. Oh,
yeah.
They're going to love it. They're going to love it.
It's fantastic. Anyway, if you want to respond on Twitter, you can get in touch with Wilfred, who's our Sentient Show Twitter account at WFTPod. Send us an email for waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You should know by now. More iTunes reviews would be nice. I'm always a fan of those. We've got the Facebook page. And next week on the show, I'm not going to tell you what it is. It's a surprise.
Well, I know it's got miming involved.
Yeah, miming. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And so much mime that there won't be room for a question of the week.
Yeah. 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 This is just, the big one is the interpretive dance step we're going to do in a few steps time. But this is, you've got to get mime out of the way before you can do interpretive dance.
That's right. Baby steps. Yeah. And look, if people don't like it, they just don't understand branching out into the arts, and trying something different.
Yeah.
They're back lost, off really.
Haters.
Back off.
Anyway, I think we've done as best we can with this.
I think so, considering we're such a crap show, according to you.
I always put us down. That's my thing.
I know we're not the Sutherlands, but, we do our best. Anyway, I think, we'll sign off for there. Thank you once again for joining us this week, everyone. We'll see you again next time with Mime for a very special episode of Waiting for Doom. See you then.
We're the best there is at being us, I think.
Thank God.
All right, everyone. Bye.